So this talk is basically some reflections that I've been churning over in my heart and mind about what meditation is. So there's many, many mysteries that we get involved in life. And it turns out that meditation, much like anything, means many different things to many different people. And one of the broadest definitions we could have is that, on the one hand, meditation is a practice. It's something we come and we do meditation. And then eventually, in a certain way, we sometimes get to a space where we feel like meditation is actually just happening. It's kind of come upon us, and we find ourselves meditating. And there isn't really a sense of doing anything. There isn't even a sense of somebody who could be doing something. It becomes a very mystical spiritual experience. So it runs that whole gamut from the very mundane, the very everyday, another thing that we do, something I need to fit into my day, right up to that really profound, this is actually what being alive feels like. So I want to speak to kind of both sides of that relationship. So essentially, what are we doing when we come to meditate? And I think a good working definition we can use is that we're actually coming because we're making a commitment to be fully ourselves, to be fully who we find ourselves to be. Is the volume okay for everyone? Yeah, okay. Not too loud. Okay. But that obviously raises a question that if we're coming just to be as we already are, then why are we coming at all? If we were just going to be as we were, why not just be as you are? Why come and meditate? I'm not going to tell you the answer to that. But something we've perhaps noticed is that coming and paying attention to what's happening is really that crucial turning point in the relationship. It's the paying attention. And that becomes really important because actually paying attention is an act of kindness. If you want to be kind to someone, you really give them all of your attention. And so when we give all of our attention to our own experience, it's an act of kindness to ourselves. And I want to come back to that a little bit later on, but it's something really to kind of, you know, like your tea bag in your hot water, really just let that soak in. That meditation is an act of kindness to oneself. And it's not selfish. But we'll come back to it. So on the one hand, we come and we just meet our experience as it is. But on the other hand, we're also developing this relationship, much like how when we're maybe we're making a cake or something like this, and we start to go away from the recipe and we start to invent and find other ways of doing things. So when we find our experience and we think, that's a little bit lacks sweetness. How can I bring sweetness into my practice? So meditation is also this interactive way of relating to your experience. And we notice there are certain things that we need to let go of. And in the Tao Te Ching, there's a section where Lao Tzu suggests that we need to shake off our dust. Yeah, we need to shake off things that have fallen on us and have started to create like a layer of this dust, life dust. There's things that we're still doing that we actually realize aren't that helpful for the way I want to live. And when they pop up in meditation, then we can start to develop and envelop a greater sense of who we are. And in that sense, greater sense of who we are, the small things, the dust, yeah, because it's quite insignificant sometimes, can start to drop away, or we can brush them off. So these are like our little habits, our little minor ways of doing things. And much like dust, sits on the very top, sits on the very superficial level. It also, by constantly kind of being engaged in rearranging the dust on ourselves, rather than getting down to the depth, we're kind of engaged on this superficial level. Engaging on a superficial level of what can I get? What does she think of me? You know, this kind of mind that we play around with. And really doesn't matter, you know? We can develop a different and deeper level of working. And one of the characteristics of this superficial level, this dust level, is it's kind of tied up in self-concern. We have this idea that life is kind of orbiting around me. What are they thinking about me? Sometimes we think, oh, I wonder what they're thinking about this other person. But most of the time, is I wonder what people are thinking about me. I wonder if anybody is liking me. I wonder if they think that I'm walking really nice. I wonder if they like my jacket. You know, and it just kind of goes on, and it will constantly go on. Because it's just rearranging the furniture. It's moving the dust around. And I don't want to really belittle unnecessarily the sense that we have of caring about what other people think about us. It's something really nice in society in general that we care about what other people will think and we act accordingly with kindness towards other people. But when it comes to meditation, it's an individual kind of diving in like experience, and we have to really release this excessive amount of self-concern so that we can really deepen and relax into a natural relationship to ourselves and to the world. And so even though we're moving away from self-concern, we're not actually moving away from that kind of caring. It's moving more towards caring. And hopefully you can sense that or know that, you know, that when I cease to be just concerned about myself, like we've seen even on this short amount of time that we've been together, small acts of generosity or great acts of generosity which we're receiving and participating in and creating. And in those moments where we feel less self-concerned because we're more concerned or more caring about more people, wider people, it makes us feel better. And so it becomes this very positive circle, positive cycle of existence. So in that way, this meditation, which is an act of kindness towards ourselves, is an act of kindness towards others and towards the world. So we already mentioned a few times, or I mentioned a few times, this idea that when we come to meditate, we need to drop the idea of actually getting anything out of it. Which really seems absurd, that we would come and do something and it might take years and years of doing this thing, that we actually have to come and do it without an expectation of getting anything from it. But it's one of those kind of dances, it's one of those kind of games. Because within planning comes expectations, and within expectations become limitations. In the Zen tradition, they have the saying of developing the beginner's mind. So when we come to the meditation, we want to be in this state that hasn't got an idea of what meditation is, what it's going to be like, what I'm going to get from it. And the saying that they have is that in the beginner's mind, there are many, many, many possibilities. But in the expert's mind, there are few. And if we have few possibilities in our mind, then oftentimes when that very thing doesn't repeat itself, and if we know how often life repeats itself, is very infrequent, then we miss the experience that has made all that effort to manifest itself. So meditation isn't just that contemplation of the future. It isn't just thinking about the past. It's something quite different than that. And again, I just want to be really clear that I think thinking about the past and contemplating the future are both really worthwhile things to do with your life. But they're just a little bit different than meditation. So if we're coming to meditation and we get up at the end and we have a beautiful day planned, but actually didn't have real stillness of heart and mind, then we were contemplating our future. We weren't necessarily meditating. Doesn't make it not worth doing, but it won't bring that rejuvenation of spirit. So many of you will have heard this idea that the real purpose of art is it has no reason to exist. That its actual purpose is a certain purposelessness. What it offers to the world isn't a function. And I think that meditation, in a way, kind of comes into a similar realm. It kind of has this non-rational impact on us, this hard to explain outside of subjective or even emotional language. And yet, like art, it becomes really one of the essentials of life, or like spending time in nature. So spending time in meditation is spending time with our human nature. It's really kind of sitting down, lying down, being present and watching it unfold. Like watching the weather roll across the hills. And maybe the weather is this kind of one exception where we look at nature and we think, how I would change this, you know, make the rain a little bit lighter or shorter or fall somewhere else or something like this. But when we're walking through the nature, we often don't look out at a valley or the shape of a lake and think, I think I could have done that better. You know, I could have, the little wiggly bit on the lake, it's, we've come in a bit, or, I mean, you may have a really hypercritical mind and you're able to do that. But I think for most of us, we don't look at a tree and think, I don't know. I've seen better trees. I'm not going to spend any time with you. There's like a real appreciation that even when it's really twisted and broken or half dead, its beauty, its vitality still comes through. And yet many times we'll sit down to meditate and we'll say, I couldn't meditate. I was having the wrong kind of thoughts. I was in the wrong kind of emotional state. If I can get rid of those thoughts and if I can get rid of that emotional state, then I can meditate. So the point being, there isn't something to get rid of. Meditation is that relationship to. It's the way we relate to it. And so if we can see over the days, if we can notice the way we look at nature, with its, we could say, imperfection, perfectly imperfect, perfectly itself. Can we also say that to ourselves? Oh yes, you've done that thing, you know, you took too much of breakfast and now there isn't enough for other people. And you can just think, yeah, okay. Next time I'll try not to do that, but isn't that just perfectly imperfect and perfectly itself? It just came through. It doesn't have to lead into this whole blaming game, which is like the next level. This is something that the Buddha referred to as shooting the second arrow. So there's suffering in life. This was the initial truth. There is, in life, there will be, at some point, unpleasant experiences. How we respond to that becomes the making of this existence. One of these things is inescapable. Things will not always go your way. But how you relate to it, there's some freedom in that. How we find ourselves imperfect and relate to that is an opportunity to practice meditation in life. So we could say that meditation is a way of looking at life. Or we could say it is a way of listening to life. So much in the same way as you are listening to me, you're taking this in, hopefully, or not. but you're hearing it, how are you listening? Just noticing, how are you listening? Like, there can be so many ways of listening. The kind of critical mind way of listening, of like, maybe this bit, but not this bit. I don't know, I'll think about this later. Or there can be just an open way of listening. There can also be listening as if this person is an authority. It's like, oh yes, I have to change, he's right, he's saying this, I was doing it wrong, you know. So there are many, many ways of listening. But can we again just listen to somebody speaking much as if they themselves were this kind of crooked old tree talking to you, just telling you about their crooked old tree life. And if it becomes something useful, you can incorporate it, right? Has no authority in itself, you give the authority. Has no right or wrong in itself, you give it the right and the wrong. So these different ways of listening to life, even with starting right now. So I mentioned already that this life is a mystery, right? And when we look at it, it's such a strange thing to be human. No idea where we came from, no idea if this is the big part of existence, or if this is just some passing show before the real stuff gets going. No real way to control our emotional life. No real way we know to bring only positive thoughts into our head. Wouldn't it be great if we just said, I think I've had enough of negative thinking about me for the rest of this life, and I'm just going to think positively about myself, encourage myself to be outgoing, creative, and do all of those beautiful things. And then somehow, the hesitancy comes in, the doubt and all of that. And we change from that full potential that we truly know that we are. So probably we've all tried it out of just so we've talked so far about kind of using the breath as a way of meeting this experience. And it's really good to do that until you feel quite calm. And then once you're feeling quite calm, just experimenting, not doing anything else. And it may be possible just to not do anything else for a short period of time before you start thinking, am I not doing anything else, or am I doing something? Oh, maybe I started doing something. And then we'll find ourselves off on some train somewhere, and then we'll suddenly realize we've gone a long journey. We'll get off the train. And that becomes the most important moment. That moment when we notice we've got off the train again, and then we can come back to the breath. And it doesn't matter how far we traveled, because the past is only existing in your mind in this moment. So anything that you're going to blame yourself for having done wrong is only existing in your mind, and is only a trick of your mind that gives you the sense of there's something to blame, something to have missed. Because right now, you're in the now, you're in the present. And you can just come back and experience life. And if we can continuously just do this, just keep coming back, just welcoming ourselves into the moment as soon as we notice that we've entered it, not wasting any energy on saying, oh, where have you been? I've been waiting for you. You should have been here before. Not wasting any of that energy, just using all the energy you have to be present by giving attention fully to this, then what we receive in return is the surprise of a lifetime. These things we sometimes call insights. This deeply seeing into your life. That's the reward for just paying attention again and again, coming back. And slowly, slowly, these insights, these ways of deeper seeing, really loosens this sense we have of needing to have self-concern, protection, barriers, limitations, identity. And what it also means is letting dissolve this sense we have of having control over our life. I think we all have a sense of needing to keep control of our life. And on a deeper level, I think that when we look, we can see that there's very, very little we can control in our life. Very, very little. So it becomes, what can we cultivate? Not what we can control. What can I cultivate? What openness can I cultivate? And this openness, this kind of like opening the hand, is another way we can describe meditation. If we can sit here with open hands, so that what comes in is touched and felt, but allowed to just pour through. A good definition for dukkha, for unsatisfactoriness, for difficulty and suffering, is a rope burn. Life is like a rope flowing through, and if we just hold the hand out, it can pass through. If we hold on tightly, it's going to pull through still. Life is moving at its own pace. Things are arising and passing, including our own existence. If we don't hold on, we don't get the rope burn. If we can manage to do that. But it all begins with just paying attention. Just noticing where we are, noticing what we're listening to, noticing what we're seeing, noticing how we're feeling. So sometimes paying attention is referred to as mindfulness. And I personally prefer the word kindfulness, because inattention is this natural kindness that we mentioned at the beginning. So either mindfulness or kindfulness, whatever you prefer, is this kind of open mind as much as possible, open eyes, open gentle eyes, listening with wide and welcoming ears, kind of similar to when we do things for the first time, when we meet something for the first time, when we see something for the first time, or when we eat something for the first time. That quality of attention that we give to a new experience, can we bring that to this breath? How many breaths do we breathe in a lifetime? And actually willingly meet it as if it is its own unique thing. And yet the more and more we look at them, they are unique. Everything is unique. Every moment is unique. Every breath is appropriate to the circumstance, to the air, which is constantly changing, to the needs of the body, which is constantly changing. So I just want to give a couple of examples of how mindfulness is kindfulness. So I don't know how many people have just, when they've had an unpleasant feeling in the body, we could start just with the physical, but it could be emotional. normally what happens is we get reactive in that moment. Like if we just use a physical example, like my knee at the moment is hurting, maybe some other people's knees are hurting. What the impulse to do is, you know, if you weren't all looking at me, it would be to stretch it out, wiggle it, move it, get into a more comfortable position. But if I apply more attention to this knee and actually locate, well, where is that pain actually? Where is pain? And really kind of find out where it is. It may be possible to find it, may not. Really depends. Physical pain can be of different natures. Can I meet the edges of it? Can I get to understanding it? What's pain feel like? Is it warm, cold, and all of this? And if we go into it, and it's not like a chronic injury which gets worse and worse if you don't move, but if we actually go into it, what we'll notice is that this unpleasant sensation could just become something quite neutral. It just becomes a sense of heat, just becomes a sense of presence or of energy. So what was a negative experience has the potential to become quite neutral. And it can even go further, that what becomes quite a neutral sensation can even start to be quite thrilling, quite enjoyable, quite a nice thing to be feeling. Some people come on meditation retreats and really find good focus from paying attention to pain. And then after some days, they might realize that, you know, the body's gotten used to the sitting and the pain has gone away, but now the mind is wandering everywhere. And they actually miss that anchoring that they were having from the painful sensation. And saying, I don't have any painful sensations anymore. I don't know how to meditate without them. So, you know, we can also appreciate that there's some beauty in this experience. But also, just that in that way of meeting, we change the experience. If that's true, that in the way of meeting, we change an experience, doesn't that mean the way we meet our experience is more important than what the experience is? And so it seems that implied in paying attention is an attitude of kindness. So just by coming back, just by paying attention, we're really being kind to our experience. So something that I've noticed, so just to close, something I've noticed many times is that if I were to say these words, so let's just close with a few minutes of meditation together, then people who were perfectly happy with their feet sticking out, leaning on their elbow, lying down with their head on the thing, suddenly sit up like a statue of a Buddha, as if this is the only posture in which you can meditate. And you know, it doesn't wind me up, I'm not irritated by it, but I just think it's really interesting that when we're really talking about getting natural, really talking about being who we are, meeting our experience as it is, I think it's really important that when someone invites you to meditate, you don't present yourself in a certain shape. Let's get to know our experience in all the shapes that we're in. Let's gain the capacity to meditate in whatever it is we're doing. That way, it becomes totally integrated with everything in our life. And that is where a really important and radical transformation comes in. Because there will be moments in your life where it's going to be really important to be able to be centered and kind to yourself and to other people. And so, yeah, there's millions of good reasons for why people do that. And if you still want to do it, if someone says, let's meditate, you know, you adopt your familiar posture. But I really like this quote from Wendell Berry, that if you want to know the dark, you've got to go dark. If you go into the dark with a light, you're going to know what it looks like in the light. We want to get familiar with all of the corners of our existence, which means we've got to be willing to go to all of the places, and even those places that scare us. But we'll get there slowly. Confidence grows through experience. We don't have to rush into the dark. But slowly, slowly, we'll become able to see there, able to explore it. But we can begin with exploring all the unfamiliar, yet very common experiences of being alive. We can meditate as we shit in a hole. We can meditate as we put up our tent. We can meditate as we fall asleep. These are all great areas to explore what it is to be alive. So if you want to intimately know what it means to be with your breath, you can really allow it to have its own rhythm and its own pace, its own roughness and smoothness, its own depth, its warmth. And likewise, in turn, you can also just be naturally open and inquisitive and pay kind attention to every moment of your life, including this one. And you can ask, just could this breath be more welcomed? Could this experience be more included? And if you even see just the slightest way that you can do that, just try and do that. So we can just try and practice open, inquisitive, kind attention. So let's have a few kind moments to close together. So may all beings know the kindness of meeting themselves fully.